Now turning to something completely different. Last night saw the star-studded Oscar Awards ceremony taking place in Hollywood. For weeks, film critics have been analysing the films and the protagonists that have been shortlisted to win the Oscars. For days, many of us have been looking forward to seeing the footage and the photographs of that glittering event that seems to crystallise in an absolute apotheosis of glamour and kitsch. In actual fact, it's not all glitter and glamour. It's really all about hard work, professional know-how, and the pursuit of excellence. My colleague Irene Lagan had a chat with Babette Buster, a successful Hollywood screenwriter, consultant, and cinema professor at the University of Southern California. First of all, Irene asked Babette, how did it all begin, and how are the Oscar Awards really decided?
It started off as just the industry in 1927. Louis B. Mayer simply wanted to create some sort of stature within the industry so people would raise their game and create better movies. And it was really meant to be an insider party. And, people would get dressed up, have a good meal, and, you know, have a good time, give each other awards. But it immediately took off as a major sort of celebrity, aristocratic event, for especially for Americans at the beginning. Seeing the stars walk in these fabulous gowns and fur coats and limousines, it took on a whole nother meaning to the culture. And soon, whoever won the Oscar was sort of given the stature of a god or goddess, and they act within the industry. They got paid much more money if they won an Oscar. And so it took on momentum as an extremely important thing.
In some cases, Babette explained, the Oscars have been given to people for past work.
But basically, you have to understand, what amuses me about the Oscar process is that people talk about it as if it's the decision made to decide on the Pope, and they're looking for the white smoke, and some sort of divine guidance from on heaven has decided that this is the best Oscar. No, it's simply a democratic process, and it's a plurality. It's just all these people voted plus one, and we will never know how close it was. I think once in history there was an actual tie, and that was with Barbara Streisand and Katharine Hepburn. Total surprise. And a lot of times Oscars process cancels out great awards to people because they've nominated two people from the same film, and people think, well, the film, they're loyal to the film, and maybe so people who should have gotten awards don't. So, for instance, Paul Newman never got an award. I think he was nominated 8 times. So finally, the Academy just gave him an honorary Oscar because I think he finally won when he was very old. I think it had been the film he did with Tom Hanks. But whatever, it's a mercurial process. So there is a delight when things are surprising, but ordinarily you have to see that the Oscars are decided in the categories of all the screenwriters vote on the best screenplays, the editors vote on the best editor, the directors on the best director, but everybody votes on best picture. So you can almost predict, because of the excellence of certain films, why certain films will win.
But what is it, Irene asked Babette, that makes for a really great movie?
Is it the story? Is it the technical aspects, the cinematography, the acting? What is it that makes it great?
A great story in cinema takes a universal theme, takes a unique story. They take you into a world you've never been to before. So none of us have ever been to a galaxy far, far away and been in Star Wars. But none of us, I dare say, or most of us, have not been a member of the Mafia in Long Island in 1945, which is The Godfather. So we love to go into worlds we've never been to before, and you have to take a point of view of that world. You cannot possibly show all the facets of it. So the director and the film team, the screenwriter, develop a context and point of view of the world. But what you must find is the universal theme by which any person looking at the film relates to it and says, what would I have done? What would I do? And so that is the art of great storytelling. So, and then, because cinema really brings together 7 great arts, which is why we love it, and they created the final great art of editing. So you have cinematography and acting, production design, sound, music, sound effects, all that. Each one of those arts must reflect the theme in an innovative way. And what's more is the kiss of death in cinema is to say about a movie, oh, I've seen that before and feels familiar. So the filmmaker must take a fresh, audacious point of view of a story we've all seen before. And that's what we're mesmerized by when we go into a movie. We are made to look at the world in a different way. But here's the big thing about cinema, and that cinema is actually the orchestration of emotions. You are experiencing basically a symphonic experience. You're experiencing a complex range of feelings, so that with great films, you walk out and you are basically saying, wow, that's great. Just go to it.
In your view, does Hollywood inform culture or does culture inform Hollywood? How does that work?
Well, it's both. I mean, I just did a study of the history of Hollywood from the very beginning. And if you look at how African Americans were portrayed in the late 20s and early 30s, it was completely unattractive. And then in 1934, 20th Century Fox realized they were bankrupt. They needed to create a business. So they took Shirley Temple and they put her on the screen and made her a star. And they made her a partner with Bojangles Robinson, who is this fantastic African-American tap dancer. And they made her hold hands with him, which was unheard of. And some of those sequences were cut out in this Deep South. But that was a huge progressive advance. And then you look at the history of cinema, and they were telling stories that were about anti-Semitism, 1947, Gentleman's Agreement. They were telling the very first film, No Way Out, in 1947 as well, which was literally discussing race relations and showed the first race riot. And this is 9-10 years before the civil rights movement begins. So the images that come from Hollywood can absolutely change culture. Now, a lot of people resent also the power of Hollywood to distort reality, inflame, glamorize violence, sexuality, drug taking. So it can go both ways. There's undoubtedly, especially young people looking at movies, do not maybe have the context to understand how to judge a film if it's over-glamorizing a situation. Hollywood's always aware that there's a responsibility they have with the storytelling as well as the rating system.
So, for example, take a movie like Milk in the wake of Proposition 8. Would that likely push the bent of, in your view, of public opinion in a particular direction? Or take a movie, say another one, Slumdog Millionaire, where you have a lot of the Western world exposed probably to parts of India that are hard to believe. You know, they're, 'cause you see them in the film. You can hear about them, but it's different when you have the impact of the symphonic experience of that poverty. Are those likely to raise awareness or change push culture in a particular political way, or, you know, in the case of Milk, or raise awareness of the poverty that some people trapped in that third world experience suffer?
Yes, I think that's why I'm proud to be in the business. I think we have a responsibility. That's, again, we take people to worlds. And by that worlds, I also mean worldviews of thinking. We allow people to experience how other people operate in the world, and that's what we're fascinated by. And I think that's the value of cinema, is taking people to those places. I mean, it was Fox, again, 20th Century Fox, who discovered the first newsreel and the power of that, and people just stood up and applauded because the moving image could take people to places they've never seen before. And that's why news is so powerful. So I think there's a huge sense of responsibility in story meetings in Hollywood with, wow, we've never seen this before. This is really important. We must tell this story. In the case of Milk, first of all, it was a major event, a news event in American history in 1977, and then it became an Oscar-winning documentary a few years later. So it's been in the pipeline to be made as a film for many, many years. So it was coincidental that it came out in the same year as Proposition 8. They were already making the film when the people who were against gay marriages decided to create that campaign. So that was a collision of culture. So that's a case of where filmmakers, artists, are always trying to be feeling the zeitgeist of their times and making films at the same time to address the issue. You know, I dare say in the case of Milk, those who want to see the film are already converted to the story. I don't know how much it persuades people who are against that film. But I think for a lot of people who just love cinema and walk in, and as particularly young people who don't know the context of history, they're given a take on a story from cinema that they wouldn't get just from a history class. And that's a big responsibility. I have an issue with filmmakers who distort history, and that's a big discussion. You have to really respect what is the truth. And actually, in storytelling, the ring of truth is always the best thing to show. It has the most resonance.
What can Christians bring to Hollywood? Is there a place for Christians in Hollywood? Or are there Christians in Hollywood, should we say?
Oh, yeah, of course there are. I think the most important thing we have to bring to the business is the pursuit of excellence and become the very best we can in our particular division, because the audience respects excellence, and we have a responsibility to be the best person we are in any way and honor the gifts we've been given. So I think that's the most important thing, and to do business with integrity. And that is a very big deal in Hollywood and in Christian filmmaking, is the integrity of deal-making. And it's an exhausting business, because you can spend years and years and years developing a script, trying to find the money, trying to make something happen. It's, difficult business, because it's based on your passion and entrepreneurial energy, and people can feel like they've wasted years of their lives. So the filmmakers must have a very clear sense of commitment and calling, because it can be a very lonely pilgrimage or wilderness to go on this. But the big thing I think is a mistake that a lot of Christians make about cinema is that cinema is already the art form of transformation. We go to see films to see a person change and become transformed. And so it's already works from a point of redemption in its arc, in its demands. And so that's why we must surrender to what the craft is and become the best at it, not try to apply something to it that isn't already there. I often think of Michelangelo. If, you know, he had to look at the prisoners in the stone, well, he went to the quarries and he would see, you know, figures in the stone, and he carved them out, and then he would evolve these extraordinary works of art. And the prisoners of stone in Florence, for example, represent the fact that he could go no further. And I often look at that is the process of storytelling, is that you have a sense there's a story in this big block of stone, and your job is to be as disciplined and focused as Michelangelo's in carving it out so that the beauty is there. The beauty is already there. And I think God wants us to reveal the beauty. He passionately loves this art form.
That was Babette Buster talking to Irene Lagan.